You know, changing from sitting to standing is very much like a plié. It's perhaps a little more difficult because of the nature of the weight support, but let's see if we can do it in a way to make it smooth and relatively easy. If you walk forward on the sit bones, and then we can put one foot behind the forward foot so that this foot is pretty much under the acetabulum or close to it. Then perhaps fold forward and then push from the floor into the acetabulum to raise your weight. And take a step or so away from the bench to break your old pattern, to change your old pattern. Bounce on the femur heads. And then step back and do the same thing in reverse. In other words, you're letting the prying action, which activates those deep pelvic muscles that control your weight transfer, until your sit bones touch the bench, and then give you compression support so that you won't need that tensile support of the muscles when you sit. Let's walk forward again and get some practice in on that. You put one foot behind the other, and you're going to fold forward. Now remember, there's no arm effort in this. Just push from the floor into the acetabula there. Just take a step away to balance out your muscle action, a little bouncing. Okay. And then we come back. Put one foot behind the other. And you lower the weight. This time, let's do this with the leg you didn't use before. One should alternate in changing from sitting to standing. You shouldn't use the same leg all the time. In fact, while I'm thinking about it, I meant to bring this out at another time and neglected to do so. It's a good idea to use different sides of your body for different movements. Don't use the same side all the time. For instance, use your left hand to do tasks as well as your right. Things you do every day, opening doors or picking up an object or even handing a clerk change or money or whatever. Don't always do it with the, whatever handed you are, that's your handedness. We're not trying to destroy that. That needs to be there. But you can still do things with both sides of the body. Just as those of you who are dancers, when you study dance movement, you don't just do the dance movement on one side, but you do it on both sides. Let that be an everyday practice, including this. So now we're going to use the leg you didn't use before. And then you're going to fold forward, pushing from the floor, and pry yourself up. Okay, and let's balance on the two thigh bones. Now we can use this same principle in climbing the stairs. We climb the stairs a couple of different ways, bouncing on the femur heads and the weight resting on the femur heads, and that's fine. The old image is not to be discarded. I'm just trying to give you a choice of different ways to look at balance. There's no real one way that you have to do it. Let's go outside now and climb the stairs. I know it's a little chilly. You might want to put your shoes on. Go out and do that. Even when you step down, you can step, you can think of the floor pushing up against the leg into the femur socket to take you down. Now, before we start climbing, one thing I want to add, so I can challenge Kathy here, who's getting to be a technician at this. Let's do a plie out here, actually, all right? And your weight's on your femur heads. Now, when you come up, you're going to push from the floor into the acetabula, but can you also watch your spine lengthen as you do that so that there is no element of the raising of your weight by grabbing down here? This is releasing into length as you come up. This is going down as you push into the femur sockets. With that action, that lengthens. Tail. Okay, so that is going to happen as you climb the stairs. Now let me start it. I'm going to push from the floor into my acetabulum as my tailbone lengthens. Going very long. Okay, so climb the stairs. Down here. Teresa, all right?
She has a sore throat.
Oh, my goodness. That's the best thing. Yeah. Tell her to put some hot ginger compresses around the throat. It'll help.
Ginger?
Compresses.
Hot?
Mm-hmm. As hot as she can stand it, you know, not to burn.
I have a little 10-year-old boyfriend who, when he gets a sore throat, he says, "Mom, I need a ginger compress. I need a ginger. Mom, I need a ginger."
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Sorry for the wait.
That's okay. Glad to have you. Now let's do the cycle of the arms above the head sitting. We never did it sitting, but it's a good position from which to do that, thinking up the front and down the back. Then you can blow through the imaginary straw, and at the end of the blowing, let your arms drop. And just shrug your shoulders with soft elbows and let them drop. Again, shrug your shoulders, soft elbows, let them drop. Now, would you imagine that image I gave you yesterday of the puppeteer suspending you from the manubrium? And could you for a moment imagine that the suspension is so strong that your sit bones aren't quite touching the bench as you sit. So it's like they're off the bench a little bit. And what's going to let them come onto the bench is that the spine is like taffy, particularly the lower back. It's so soft that the weight, the heavy weight of the pelvis brings it down onto the benches, and this lengthens. And you let it lengthen, but you still have that same support at the manubrium from the puppeteer. Just think that for a moment. And you can focus on the softness of the spine at whatever point you feel you need it most. Lower back is usually the area where a lot of us tend to tighten it, push it forward to sort of brace ourselves in sitting, you know. So you want to get a sense of letting the lower spine and back in particular be like taffy, soft, lengthening as the puppeteer supports you in front. That's another way to get the balance between tensile and compression forces. Now, we'll come back to that in just a moment. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Now I want to add to that, letting the ribs rest in the spine. Just let the ribs rest in the spine. Lean against the spine. Remember, they have that support in back. We've just taken the support of the ribs in front with the tensile image. And now to maybe help you get an insight or a sense of centering the ribs in back, let's just do a little turn to one side or the other. Maybe everybody should turn the same way so we don't have any collisions. Say everybody turn to the right for a moment. And think of the ribs on the right side there in particular sinking into the spine as you make the turn. You see, instead of pulling them away, it makes the turn easier too. And then you can just come back. And now very easily turn to the right again. Let the ribs center in the spine. And then you come back forward. Now let's turn to the left, opposite direction. And think of those ribs just sinking in the spine. And let's come back forward. And again, let's just take the turn to the left. Let the ribs sink in the spine. And then come back forward. Now, will you watch... Well, first of all, I want to just renew with you the head balance. Put your fingers up here and renew the image of the head balanced on the top of the spine. And maybe letting the head just have a little rocking action just to get it dynamic. Now, think of the sternum instead of being supported by the puppeteer. Let me give you an alternative image. Just think of it floating up. And it floats up toward that point where your head rests on the spine. It floats up there. Floats up to where your head is resting on the spine. Now that's a beautiful image to work on. It's long term. I'm going to give you something a little more gross than that so that you can get in touch with this on a gross level and then refine it to this as you cultivate it. The sternum, as I told you yesterday, has muscles that come into the mastoid processes that help with the suspension here. If we were to pass a plane through the cardinal coronal plane or the median coronal plane, passing it through the head divides the head into a front half and a back half, even as it does the rest of the body. So the back half of the head is really, in essence, serving as the compression member to which those muscles are attached that help to support the sternum. So the back half of the head actually then is the puppeteer, partially at least. So the image I'm going to give you for that, and we're going to physicalize it actually, is that the back half of the head slides up. And as the back half of the head slides up, as opposed to, I can't manipulate that because it won't work, as opposed to this, you see, that's automatically, if you do that in a nice fashion and balance your head at the lateral occipital joint, think of the back half of the head sliding up. That's going to help create this support here at the maneuver. That is to say, that's another way to think about the puppeteer. So, I want you to put your fingers again in the crevices there between the front of the mastoid process and the back of the jaw. That's our central point. And as you nod your head, when you nod it forward, it's a small, gentle movement, but think of the back half of the head sliding up. In other words, I want an awareness in your being to begin to manifest itself that this is moving up as you move the head forward. It's as if the back part goes up. That's what you want to think. More than this, you want to think more up as you do that movement. And it's very gentle, and just think it. That's the idea. Very nice. You're getting a nice thing for this. Okay. But nice and easy here, Robert. It's nice and easy. Now, what you've got to add to this is that the spine lengthens from below. As the back half of the head slides up easily, 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 You let go of the lower end of the spine so that it gets longer. That's the idea. That's the idea. It's just a little tiny movement. A little bit of that. Yes. Now, I'm going to keep coming back to that because that, as I'm going to show you in just a few moments, is creating the support for the shoulders. The next exciting chapter in this little story will take place after I find out who's here. And is Jamie here? My goodness, what happened to her? All right. In the vertical position, the shoulder girdle and the arms are not involved in the support of the weight of the torso. Let's see what the shoulder girdle is. Shoulder girdle consists of these two long bones here, the long curved bones called the clavicles, and the scapulae here in back. I'm going to really include the arms with the shoulder girdle since the two are very closely connected here at these joints, which I'll point out in just a moment. I said that the shoulder girdle is not involved in the support of the weight of the torso in the upright position. What does support the shoulder girdle is the spine. And here's the way it does that. The weight is resting on the shoulder girdle, is resting on the manubrium. The support for the manubrium we've established through the tensile support comes from the muscles coming up into the base of the neck, and also the first rib, which serves to brace the support with its tensile support and its compression support into the spine. And that's true, again, of the entire support of the rib cage. I told you yesterday the ribs transmit the weight of the entire structure that's connected to it, all the soft tissue and whatever else, all the way to the rib cage, transfers at each rib level back to the spine. So what we're adding to that this morning is the shoulder girdle being supported by the spine instead of trying to support weight with the shoulder girdle. And the shoulder girdle is delicately balanced here in terms of its compression support on the manubrium. It's very much like a mobile. I'm trying to give you some descriptive terms to discourage you from using your shoulders as weight bearers. We all bear the weight of the world upon our shoulders, so many of us, psychologically and even physically, we try to bring weight into the shoulders. When you carry objects, that's why I was giving you that image of letting the weight rest on the femur heads, which is what's going to happen to the weight at some point when you're standing, because the weight that the spine is supporting or bearing transfers through the pelvis, and then when you're standing under the femur heads.
Mm-hmm. Because we think of the ribs being supported by the spine and the back, and then not think of the manubrium also holding up the ribs in front?
No, you could think of... Well, no, I wouldn't think of the manubrium holding the ribs up. I would think more of the ribs holding the manubrium up there as they thrust into the spine, because there's a thrust going through there. It's almost as if they lift, the manubrium. I'd think of it that way. I think it'd be a better way to think about it. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this structure here so that we understand it more. If you look at the clavicles here, they have this attachment, as I pointed out, at the manubrium, where you have ligaments binding bone to bone. We call that a strong bony attachment. A ligament is strong bony attachments, that kind of a joint. At the ends of the clavicles here, where they connect to the part of the scapula, which is called the acromion process, this is actually not a part of the scapula, but what the scapula has formed into, the acromion process. That also is a ligamentous attachment here. But that's only the shoulder girdle attaching itself together. The only strong bony connection of the entire shoulder girdle, where bone is attached to bone by means of ligament, to the trunk of the body is here at the manubrium. So that again is where your shoulders are based, on the manubrium. And that's point number one, kinesthetic point number one we'll be working on this morning. The second thing, and this is really almost a part of this first thing, is that since there is no other ligamentous attachment of the entire shoulder girdle or the trunk of the body, that is that the scapula have no ligamentous attachments either to the ribs or the spine, but only muscles which attach them. That means that we need to think of the shoulder blades really separate, free of the ribs, not stuck together. So we're going to be using some images this morning in which we create a soft space between scapula and ribs by placing as an image between the scapula and the ribs some soft medium. And I'll be giving you those images in just a moment. Let's now come back to the shoulder girdle here and its base at the manubrium. What I did earlier in class was to image and process you to create a support for the scapula, for the clavicles here, by working the image of the back half of the head sliding up, the puppeteer giving you support here, so that this support would be created in terms of the process of imagery, so that when we let the shoulders rest on the sternum here, it's not from a collapsed beginning, but rather from the standpoint of it having a nice support. It's very interesting as you look at this complex series of compression and tensile support here. I said it's like a mobile, and that's exactly what it's like, because again, you have tensile support with the muscles coming into the head and spine. And then you have the compression support of the first rib bracing into the spine. And then, of course, the compression support which the spine affords all the attachments to it, whether they be tensile or compression members. By the way, that is one thing I meant to make clear, I did not. And that is that all tensile members in any structure depend ultimately on a compression support. Can you see that? That you cannot have tensile support in midair. It has to attach to a compression member. For instance, this hook here of the skeleton is attached to this compression member, which is resting on the floor. So the skeleton, while it's hanging from the hook, ultimately its weight is being supported by the floor, which has come down through the base here. All right, now let's again proceed from general to specific. I think maybe that coming to standing for a moment and finding those sternoclavicular joints would be in order. And then we'll refine what we're going to do in the sitting position. If you lift one of your clavicles up and forward, and then you can take your fingers and trace the bone from the distal end back toward the manubrium. And once you get back here, can't do it too well with my recorder here, then you can let the arm drop. Okay. And the image that I'll give you is that the arm is simply a continuation of the clavicle, so that you think of your arm as being this long rather than this long. The same principle I gave you when I gave you the epaulets and the tassels of the epaulets through the fingertips. All right. Now, with that image in mind, that is your arm hanging from here, will you swing your arm and let the momentum die of its own inertia? So that it just stops. And once again, let's swing the arm. Letting the momentum die of its own inertia, and the arm just hanging from that point. Okay, let's go to the other side and lift the clavicle up and forward. And trace the bone back to the sternoclavicular articulation, and then let the arm hang. Think of the arm, again, being all the way to here. Here to here. Long. Now, with that image, swing the arm. And once again, let's swing the arm. Okay. Now let both arms hang down by your sides. And let's swing the arm, both. And then just let the arms die, the momentum die of its own inertia. All right, let's do the dancer's side bend or lateral flexion, thinking of the arm, particularly the one toward which you're leaning, hanging from the manubrium, so that you don't pull any weight into the arm. Let it hang as a tensile member. That's your image. And it's hanging in your image from the manubrium. Now, your weight is resting mostly on the femur head toward which you're leaning. To come up, just you gently push from the floor into the acetabulum, letting the weight out of the arm constantly, so you don't pull any weight into your arm, and then you come up to vertical and balance on two thigh bones. And your arm is beginning to feel a little longer already. Complete the job by leaning in the same direction again. Now, when you do that bend as if you're going over a barrel, so that it's up and over rather than just a collapse. Don't collapse into this movement. Your central axis is bending and it's lengthening as it bends. That's the simplest way to think about it. Now, the arm is hanging from the manubrium and you're going to push from the floor with that supporting leg right into the acetabulum so that the weight in the arm can keep dropping out. No holding. An arm, as you rest on your femur head, probably it feels a little longer. And that's fine. Now let's go in the opposite direction. Let's just fold, 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 fold. And you're going to lean, lean. Okay. And the weight is resting on the femur head. Okay, now you're going to push from the femur head into, from the floor rather, the femur head into the socket. And let the weight continue to fall out of the arm. And once again, let's just lean. Fold over. All right, now as you let your weight rest on your femur head, let the weight of the arm drop, weight out of the arm. Push from the floor into the acetabulum, and that's going to take you up. Now balance on the two femur heads. Again, let the weight of the arms rest on the femur heads. And your arms probably feel a little longer than usual. Okay. A little bouncing on the femur head. Okay, now have a seat, and I want to get into another layer, another depth of this as an image. The shoulders, as I've indicated, at the based on the top of the sternum through the clavicle here. That's a delicate balance. Again, it's like a mobile. And the little process we're going to do now is a delicate one that you will probably find quite beneficial as you get more into this. I don't mean just this morning, but I mean if I'm hoping you will continue to practice some of these things from time to time. But what it is, in order to help get this joint centered, we're going to image a circling under the clavicle here, around the rim of it, the head of the clavicle, under it, and then up the back of it, and over the top, and down the front. Turn it to the side so you can see. You're going to think of going under, that's into the depth of the body, up the back of it, over the top, and down the front. Okay. Everybody see the direction of that and the location? Going under it, from front to back, under the clavicle, up the back of it, over the top, and down the front. Beg your pardon? That's around the head, you're imagining around the head of the clavicle here. That's to help center that joint, very much the way we centered the iliofemoral by thinking into it. So, we'll do that now. The tactile aid you'll give yourself is to take your fingers and run them toward the sternoclavicular, and you'll be in the vicinity of that. If you're anywhere along in here, that's fine. Right in here, it's fine. This is called a sternal notch. If you want to put your fingers in there, you can get a sense of that notch and where the heads are in there. Okay, so you've got your finger then in the proximity of the sternoclavicular joint, so you're not too far from the head of the clavicle. Now let's image circling under the head and up the back of it and down the front. Now what needs to be done as you visualize this is to take into consideration the depth of the body. There's a lot of space in there that you can use. You're not a two-dimensional object. You're not flat. That's what Barbara meant in her book, the title I gave you in the first class, Body Proportion Needs Depth. And so she worked a lot on images. We worked a lot together on creating images of depth. Use that depth as you come under. So we'll go under again, circling under in your thinking, up the back, over the top, and down the front. And again, think under, up the back, over the top, and down the front. Now leave your hand touching the sternoclavicular. And that, of course, the beginning of your arm in your image. And now swing your arm into your lap. Let that go up. And then just let your arm hang again for a moment. And I want one more circle under, up the back, over the top, and down the front. And let's swing the arm in the lap. Okay, we'll go to the other side now and trace the clavicle toward the sternum, so you're at the sternoclavicular articulation there, fairly close to the head of the clavicle. Okay, now you're going to think of circling under, up the back, over the top, and down the front. Under, up the back, over the top, and down the front. Now let's go under one more time. Use the depth, the anterior posterior depth. Go under, you're behind the head of the clavicle now, and now you're going up the back of it, and then over the top. Now thinking of your arm beginning there, swing the arm in your lap. Okay, and then let the arm hang down beside you. And once again, let's swing the arm in the lap. Okay, now that's a good beginning to getting a sense of the balance of the shoulders at the manubrium. So when we come back to the imagery of the shoulders and the arms hanging from the manubrium, you have a reference, you have a little process that can get you into that depth. Yes, Robert?
Is it just the head of the collarbone, or is it just the whole clavicle?
I would circle it at the head because I'm trying to establish that this is the base of support. And I want this end to hang free. You could think under here. It would not be detrimental, actually. If you want to think space under there, that's all right. Because there is space under there, and that needs to be that the rib cage, which I'll be taking up tomorrow, is under the shoulder girdle. But for this particular process, I'm trying to establish that the base where you're getting compression support is here. So I think I'd stay with the circling here. But again, if you simply want to think under here, think space, that'd be fine. In fact, that's a good image. I'm going to point that out again tomorrow because that's a great deal of what tomorrow's lesson is going to be about. Okay, let me give you the image that we'll be working on, a couple of images for constructive rest. We're going back to constructive rest this morning. And I want to create for you now an image of separation of scapula and ribs. So we'll do two images, the first of which is this. We'll imagine that we insert a sponge between the scapula and the ribs in the border that's closest to the spine. That's called the dorsal border, sometimes the medial border. And then imagine slipping a little sponge in between the scapula and the ribs. So we have a soft medium between the scapula and the ribs, which will discourage one from gluing the scapula on the rib cage. My observation has been that, of course, we all have different patterns. Some of us simply some of us simply glue, as it were, the scapula onto the ribs, you know, hold it very tight. Others actually hold weight in there. They're actually bearing weight with those muscles. And still others, more ambitious, pull the weight from down here up into those muscles around the scapula, and they're literally holding that weight in there. Now, very few do it as grossly as I'm demonstrating, but there are all sort of subtle variations of doing that. Again, I opened the class by saying that in the upright position, the weight, the support of the torso is not done with the shoulders or the shoulder girdle. It's floating, it's resting on the torso. It's not holding the weight of the torso up. The torso, through the spine, as I described earlier, is supporting it. So by inserting this sponge in between, that's going to be the beginning of helping you to learn to release the weight from around the shoulders, in that sense. Now, we've taken up the support here. So now what remains is to get back here. Now, something's going to happen to that sponge. Once you see it in between the ribs and the scapula, it's going to fill with water and expand, which gives you even more space, soft space. That's a let happen thing. You can't make that happen. You can let it happen. You can image it.